Welcome back to another volume of Truly Disturbing Tales from Reddit. Today we're going to be narrating three new unsettling stories taken directly from the platform. I encourage you all to sit back, grab a snack, and enjoy these terrifying personal accounts. Now, without any further delay, let's jump right in. When I was in the third grade, I made a friend named Nicholas, Nikki for short. We were both on the quieter side compared to our classmates, and we both shared a love for pudding cups. One day at school, Nikki forgot his lunch at home, so I told him that he could have my pudding cup. That's how we became friends. From that moment on, we shared my pudding cups almost every day. The other kids in our class used to tease us, accusing us of having crushes on each other, and chant that horrible K-I-S-S-I-N-G song all the time. It had become customary for Nikki and I to separate ourselves from the other kids at recess and at lunch. We had a big tree we would always meet under, in the morning, at recess, and for a few minutes after school before our parents came to pick us up. Nikki himself lived with his older sister and single mother. He tried explaining the concept of a divorce to me once, but in my 8-year-old mind, it didn't make sense that his parents weren't together, happily married. As you can imagine, my parents were married, and my home life was the epitome of an adoring nuclear family. Imagine Full House, except with a mother who hadn't passed away, and a couple of cousins instead of uncles. I can't recall a single moment in my childhood where I felt unloved or uncared for in any way. But I soon realized that that was the rarity. During one of mine and Nikki's morning visits to the tree, as we had cleverly nicknamed it, he invited me to his birthday party. He excitedly unzipped his backpack and withdrew an invitation card made of blue construction paper. There was a hand-drawn tree on the front, two little kids of approximately mine and Nikki's size and coloring, and a home address scribbled inside. To this day, I still have it. When the bell rang, he and I ran inside with the rest of the kids, and I waited all day for him to give out the rest of his birthday invitations, but he never did. I was the only one he had invited. Because the other kids teased us so much, my 8-year-old mind had chalked it up to the conclusion that he didn't want any bullies there, and had therefore invited his only friend, me. Suffice to say, I was both flattered and happy. I gave the card to my mother later on in the evening. She smiled and said, "How cute," and very quickly gave me permission to go. It was my first non-family birthday party. The next day, I went to the store with my mother and older brother, and we picked out a birthday present for Nikki. He and I were heavily into Transformers, so we got him a tiny Transformer, and I wrapped it up in blue wrapping paper all by myself. His birthday was on the following Saturday. My mother dropped me off at Nikki's house, briefly speaking with his mother in the kitchen, discussing pickup times and how fast they're growing comments, before kissing me on the forehead goodbye. Because Nikki, his sister, and I were the only ones there, we decided to play a couple of board games and then tag when it wasn't raining outside anymore. We were in the backyard, and it got to be a little sunny afterwards. Nikki and I fell deep into our dramatic reenactment of the latest and most exciting Power Rangers episode to date, that we had seen at least. His sister, a preteen at the time, went inside for a minute to, quote, check something, which Nikki later revealed to me was a code phrase she used when she wanted to talk to the cute neighbor boy on the phone. Inside the kitchen, his mother was cooking and keeping an eye on us through the window. It was only as we went inside to eat that I realized there were no decorations. In fact, there wasn't anything to signify that it was Nikki's birthday at all, except for the homemade chocolate cake. I had loosely gathered that Nikki's family didn't have a lot of money, and that maybe was the reason that he went to school without lunch so often. But I never really asked, and Nikki never really said anything. Not that an 8-year-old would do either of those things. We went down to the basement after we cut the cake and took a couple of photos, where there was a tiny TV and a Super Nintendo system. We played video games for roughly 10 minutes before there was a loud knock at the door. Nikki stopped the game and jogged up the basement stairs to answer the door, eventually screaming, "Dad, I thought you said you couldn't come." He was very excited, understandably so, considering how rarely he saw his father and what a big occasion it was in his life when he did. He would always tell me about it at school, that his cool, fun dad came to visit and took him for a ride around the block on his motorcycle. For a while, I'll admit I wasn't sure if I believed his dad actually owned a motorcycle, but when Nikki came down to introduce me to his dad, I followed them outside into the front yard and saw a big, black Harley parked in the driveway. There were two helmets, one for his dad and one for him. I was instantly jealous. My own father drove a minivan and wore polo shirts and cargo pants almost religiously. Nikki's dad, however, was the complete and total opposite of mine. He wasn't suburban at all. In fact, he looked like a character out of The Outsiders. Right away, I thought he was cool. And right away, I wanted to fit in with them. I should note that Nikki and I came from different ethnic backgrounds. He was white. I was not. Because I went to school with a majority of white kids and lived in a town with a majority white population, I found it very difficult to fit in sometimes. That was part of the reason I had grown so close to Nikki so quickly. He was pretty much the only kid in school who gave me the time of day. And I, him. The other kids didn't like me because I looked different, and they didn't like Nikki because he wore old, faded clothes. He was raised on a modest salary. His mother had a few jobs, if I remember correctly. She was a waitress, a grocery store clerk, and a part-time janitor. For a single mother with two growing kids, a house, and a car that was always breaking down, she was really quite optimistic. I liked her a lot. She was always nice. Even when she caught one of the bullies in school shoving Nikki to the ground, she was nice. So when she wasn't nice to Nikki's father, and when she pulled him aside to ask him to leave the party, I couldn't help but wonder why. My mother picked me up soon afterwards, and I made a pact with Nikki that I would come over again very soon. Because my mother had finally met his in person and spoke with her, I was allowed to come over and play now. Before that, she would always tell me, "Not until I meet his mother." From that point on, I went over to Nikki's house 2 or 3 times every week. Sometimes his mother would be there, sometimes his older sister would be there. One of them was always there to look after us and make sure we didn't get up to any trouble. We would usually just go down to his basement and play video games, or when the weather would allow it, we would ride bikes in the cul-de-sac and jump on his tiny trampoline. He was always better at flips than me, and I kind of resented him for it. One time, he tried to teach me how to front flip, and I nearly landed on my head. The second I got to my feet, I ran away and started crying, mostly due to embarrassment. I wanted Nikki to think that I could hang, but I couldn't really do any of the cool things he could. My own parents thought trampolines were too dangerous and forbade me from jumping on Nikki's. I used to do it anyway, though. Kids will be kids. Nikki thought I was cool, though, and to get my crybaby ass to feel better, he admitted he was a little jealous of me. He said he was jealous of my new clothes, my new bike, and just everything new that I had. That was the first time he opened up to me about being less privileged. The Super Nintendo in his basement was an old gift from a cousin who lived in the next town over, but it barely worked half the time. That was probably why his cousin gave it away in the first place. We sat in his basement for a few minutes, talking about all the little reasons we were jealous of each other. And then his sister came down to say she was going to the mall with her friends, but that their dad was coming over to look after us. Their mother was at work that afternoon. For whatever reason, Nikki was shocked to hear his dad was coming over. I took it as a surprise visit and ran outside with Nikki when we heard the motorcycle pull up. Indeed, his dad was there, and he also had a late birthday present for Nikki in his hands. It was a box, roughly the size of his head, and it was wrapped in newspaper. When we went inside to open it, he made Nikki promise not to tell his mother what he got him. Apparently, his mother didn't want Nikki to get a present from his dad, but his dad bought him a present anyway. Nikki readily nodded, so I followed his lead. I watched Nikki tear the newspaper to shreds, revealing a brand new Polaroid camera within. Nikki had no idea what it was at first, looking to his dad for answers, before I excitedly said, "A camera. You got a camera." I could tell Nikki felt embarrassed that he didn't know right away what it was, but he was also just so happy that he got something. He brushed the embarrassment aside, and we opened the box to play with it. His dad taught us how to use it and explained how it worked to us. He pointed it at Nikki and snapped the first photo, flapping it in the air afterwards, and then showing us the final product. It was very cool to me that the photos came out right away. My family had a camera too, but we had to wait for the photos to get developed at a store. By the time that would happen, I'd always forget and lose interest. But Nikki's new Polaroid camera printed out photos right away. Nikki loved it, and I loved it, and his dad really seemed to love it too. When his dad pointed the camera at me next, I smiled like a dork, and we all laughed at the photo after. My front teeth were missing, and I looked like that photo that we all have of our childhood self that makes us embarrassed when we look back at it. Nikki and I traded our photos after. He kept the photo of me, and I kept the photo of him. We said we'd be friends for as long as we kept the photos of each other intact, so I took extra good care of mine. Now that we had a new toy to play with, I was always asking to go over to Nikki's. Because I lived in a house with so many other family members and relatives, I felt lost there sometimes. When I went to Nikki's, I felt more like I belonged, and it was always much quieter there too. It was the mid-90s at this time, so parents were less strict with their young children, and mine allowed me to spend hours at Nikki's as long as his mother was okay with it, and she always was. She loved having me around because she knew how happy it made Nikki to have a friend to hang out with. My mother would frequently send me to Nikki's house with some sort of dish or snack, and she even invited Nikki's family to my house for dinner once. My family really liked his, and I think my older brother had a tiny crush on his older sister, but she was all about neighbor boy, so tough luck, bro. For this reason, I was allowed to go to Nikki's house almost every day now. He didn't live too far from my house either. His house was one of the few places I knew how to get to, apart from my own. There were times when I would go straight to his house from school, and times where he would come over to play with me at mine. The latter happened rarely, as we both preferred his house. Mine was just way too crowded. One day at school, Nikki told me his dad had come over the other night and got mad at him for not taking any new photos with the Polaroid he got for his birthday. Both Nikki and I loved the Polaroid, and we thought it was very cool the first few times that we played around with it. But as most kids do, we eventually lost interest, and Nikki sort of just tucked it under a blanket in the basement and forgot about it. I guess his dad didn't like that very much, so Nikki asked me if I'd help him take photos for the next time his dad comes to visit. In fact, he said his dad specifically requested that I be in the photos. I found this perfectly normal as an 8-year-old. I figured Nikki's dad wanted us to have fun with the camera and immortalize our friendship, make a scrapbook or something. Up until this point, Nikki's mother and sister still had no idea he even had a camera. I agreed I would come over soon, and we would take a bunch of silly photos. But Nikki forgot to mention one thing to me. He forgot to mention that his dad would be there. It was the same story as last time. His mother was working, his sister was at the mall with friends, presumably with money their dad gave her, and their mother had no idea any of this was going on. I went over there after school, and I noticed the motorcycle parked out front. Nikki didn't seem surprised to see it, but something about his mood was off that day. I figured it was because he got in trouble the last time he saw his dad. Because it was raining a little, we went inside to hang out in the basement, where I thought we would play on the Super Nintendo for a bit. But that wasn't the plan at all. Nikki's dad was in the basement. He greeted me with a big smile and asked us how school was, if we did anything fun at recess, what kind of things we learned in class. The usual questions a parent would ask. I thought nothing of it, as my parents would often ask me the same questions. Eventually, Nikki's dad said we should start taking photos, so I obliged. I smiled widely for the camera, but instead of pressing the button and laughing at the photo like we had done the other day, Nikki's dad tutted at me and said I should try to look prettier. I had no idea what he meant by prettier, so I just smiled a little smaller and held it for a second before he corrected me again. As you can imagine, he kept at it, nitpicking at me until I let my hair down, telling me to pinch my cheeks before every photo to make sure they were flushed, rosy, and pretty. This whole time, he hadn't taken a single photo of Nikki. Because it's been decades, and because I've somehow managed to block most of this out, I'm not entirely sure what led up to it, but Nikki's dad eventually convinced me to start taking articles of clothing off. First my jacket, then my socks, and then my cardigan. And then he asked Nikki to get in the frame. The whole time Nikki had been standing off to the side, not saying a word, and not looking at me either. It was like he felt something was wrong, but he was too afraid to say it. What ended up happening is exactly what you think. First, Nikki was told to hold my hands, then hug me, then put his face really close to mine, and then he was told to kiss me on the mouth. His dad snapped photos of it every step of the way, asking Nikki questions like, "Isn't she pretty? Don't you think she's pretty, Nick? Do you want to take her on dates?" It was a whole lot of that and a whole lot of touching. The whole time, I stood completely still, not really sure of what was going on. Had any other boy been there with me, I'm not sure I would have remained so calm. But because it was Nikki, I felt somewhat safe. I didn't feel like we were doing anything wrong. The kiss was gross to me, but everything else, I was mostly okay with. We stopped pretty quickly after that kiss, though. Not because his dad wanted to, but because I had to go home. My mother came to pick me up. Usually, it would be my brother that did so. That way he could talk to Nikki's sister a little bit. But he had basketball practice that day, so my mother came instead. For some reason, Nikki's dad didn't go up to answer the door. He sent Nikki to do it, and I took a second to grab my jacket and sweater and put them on. During this time, while Nikki's dad and I were alone in the basement, he said he would come back to take more pictures one day, and that I should wear makeup next time. I didn't have any at 8 years old, but I didn't tell him that. I just collected my things and got out of there to go home. I saw my mother at the door and she hugged me, asking how my day was. And then suddenly, everything was normal again. For me, anyway. I glanced back to wave bye to Nikki, but he had already closed the door. The next day at school, he completely ignored me. I went to the tree and waited there all morning and all recess and for an extra 15 minutes after school, but he wasn't there. I saw him in class, so I knew he was at school. He just didn't want to hang out with me for some reason. This carried on for the rest of the week, until one day, my mother got a phone call from Nikki's mother. I was in the living room watching wrestling with my brother, and I vividly remember my mother's smile vanishing as she listened on the phone to whatever Nikki's mother was saying. I remember asking what was wrong, if Nikki was sick, but my mother didn't say anything to me. She just nodded and listened and nodded and listened, face draining of color, as though she had seen a ghost. Later, she asked to speak with me in my bedroom and asked me very clearly, "Sweetie, who was there at Nikki's house the other day? Was it his sister Angela or someone else?" As soon as I said someone else, her eyes became watery and she asked what had happened. I was vague on details because I wasn't really sure what had happened myself. It was such a blur to me at this time. The only thing I was worried about was Nikki and why he had been ignoring me. Because I didn't want him to be more mad at me and ignore me for longer, I kept quiet about the camera, just saying that Nikki's dad watched us play and told me I was pretty. The last part was apparently enough to set off a huge red flag in my mother's mind. She gave me another hug, told me she wasn't mad at me, and that everything would be okay really soon. So, this is what happened. Apparently, Nikki's mother had found the camera, asked Angela about it, and then Nikki, quickly learning that their dad had been coming over without her knowledge. The rule was he could only visit when she was home, but the past few times, she wasn't. The next day, I found Nikki under the tree at school, and he very seriously told me that we couldn't be friends anymore. I asked why, and he just said, because. He went so far as to giving me back the Polaroid of me smiling like a dork, the one I had exchanged for the Polaroid of him, both of them signifying our friendship. Because nothing had really happened, because the world was a different place 20 years ago, and because the photos weren't explicit in nature, nothing happened to Nikki's dad. But that's not for lack of trying on both of our mothers' parts. I remember going to the police station, telling them everything with my mother there beside me, and repeating the story again to various lawyers. But the most we were able to accomplish was preventing Nikki's dad from seeing Nikki and Angela. Apparently, by coming to the house when Nikki's mother wasn't there, he had violated the terms of their custody agreement. When it was all over, the meetings and everything else, Nikki and his family ended up moving. Apparently, Nikki knew this was going to happen, and that's why he told me that we couldn't be friends anymore. I want to say that I managed to give him the photo back before he left, and that we shared a pudding cup one last time. But I can't, because those things never happened. He moved, and I stayed. And for a really, really long time, I sat alone at the tree during recess. Eventually, I made new friends. Eventually, I stopped waiting for him to move back. And eventually, I was a happy kid again. But I have never, not once in my life, forgotten about Nikki or what happened in his basement that day. The way everything about him changed so drastically. If it weren't for his dad, I'd like to think we would have remained friends, at least through childhood. Growing up in the 90s, my mom was always very protective towards my sister and me. Most of the time, it seemed to us like overkill, like we were the sheltered girls of our neighborhood. But there was one incident from my childhood that makes me glad my mom never dropped her guard, not even once. I was a preteen, probably 10 or 11 years old. My mom and I had finished doing some shopping at Sam's Club, and we'd stopped at Wendy's for an early dinner. To my eyes, nothing unusual happened while we were there. We stood in line, ordered, ate, and we left. We were walking in the parking lot and almost had made it back to the minivan when my mom said, sort of loudly, that she should probably go to the bathroom before driving home. I remember thinking that that was a bit weird because we weren't that far away from home. I was just old enough that sometimes if my mom had to run into a store briefly, she would give me the keys and let me sit in the locked van and read. The back windows were tinted, so it was hard to see if someone was inside. And she would always rush through her business and come jogging back to the van to minimize the time she left me alone. So I asked her then if I could have the keys. She said no. She thought that I ought to try to use the bathroom too. I remember telling her that I didn't have to go, when, through gritted teeth, she told me, "Well, try anyway." On our way back into the restaurant, we passed a middle-aged man. He was a bit dirty-looking, as if he'd spent all day welding or working on cars. He was of average height and thin and had longish gray-brown hair. Nothing about him was remarkable to me, and he only made brief eye contact with us as we turned around. He was heading to a pickup truck parked in the front of the lot, while we were parked more towards the left side of the building. When we get back inside the restaurant, my mom didn't head towards the bathroom, but instead led me to a table and sat down. "Aren't we going to the bathroom?" I asked. "No," my mom said. "We're waiting here until that man leaves." She was talking about that man that walked out behind us, heading to the red pickup truck. Aside from the grime, he didn't seem weird to me, so I thought my mom was making a snap judgment. "Why?" I asked. "I kept catching him staring at us in line," she explained. "He would look at you and look away, then look back again, Then he left right after we did. It just didn't feel right, and I'd rather be safe than sorry. I told her that I didn't see anything, but then quickly asked if I could get a Frosty while we waited. My mom was looking down into her wallet to see if she had cash for my ice cream, when the red pickup truck rolled by the front window of the restaurant, impossibly slow. The man in the driver's seat was turned so much so that his shoulders were almost square with the restaurant as he passed, looking in through that big window. His eyes sought us out inside and found me. I will never forget the full bore of his eyes as he stared at me for the whole length of his passing the window, before accelerating to normal speed and driving away. I'm 33 now, and still get the shivers when I think about that day, that man's stare, and the way my mom checked her mirrors for a red pickup truck the entire ride home. This happened back when I was in college. I was home for the summer working. My boyfriend was also home for the summer, working and living with his parents about an hour and a half away. We finally had a rare day when neither of us needed to work, so he drove down to spend the day with me. We were saving for the coming school year, so we tried not to spend too much money, which ended up meaning we ate lunch and dinner with my family at my house. After dinner, wanting to get some alone time as a couple, we decided to pick up root beer floats at Sonic and drive out to a local state park where young couples like to hang out. We parked and walk out to one of the little covered picnic tables in the woods. While the parking lot was well lit because of how thick the woods were, it was quite dark sitting at the picnic table itself. We'd hung out here late into the night before and always felt perfectly safe. But for some reason on this evening, I felt rather nervous sitting in the dark. So when another couple popped out of the woods past where we were and started making out, leaning up against the other end of the table, we moved to my boyfriend's pickup. My boyfriend turned on the radio, and we sat in companionable silence, attempting to eat our ice cream before too much of it melted. Due to the heat of summer, we had the windows rolled all the way down. After a little while, the couple we'd seen come out of the woods left. Looking around, I realized something odd. Although there were normally at least half a dozen other vehicles parked in this particular lot on any evening, we were now the only vehicle in sight. Even so, I didn't think much of it and continued finishing up my float. All of a sudden, I got the worst feeling possible. You know that feeling when your hair stands up on the back of your neck because you can feel someone looking at you when you thought you were alone? It started like that, but got much worse. I had the distinct feeling that I needed to run in the pit of my stomach. I started looking around and realized my boyfriend was also looking around nervously about the same time he noticed that I was doing it. I asked him, did he have a bad feeling? His reply was an emphatic, hell yes, uttered as he started the truck and began to drive out of the park. Now, since we were facing into the park, he had to make a wide U-turn. As we passed by the area where we'd been parked, a man stepped out to the edge of the woods. Seeing someone appear from a spot that you weren't expecting can be unsettling on its own. But to kind of put two and two together in real time and realize why you were feeling watched in the first place doesn't make that feeling any more settled. The guy was dressed in dark clothes and a full jacket, which was even more odd given the season. I think that it took us less than 5 seconds to see him and drive past, but his face is more or less burned into my memory bank. Late 40s, light complexion, tall and gangly, gray hair tucked beneath a ball cap, sunken in eyes that made him seem even older, or perhaps just more hollow. Maybe under the light of day, he wouldn't have been so eek-inducing, but under the cover of darkness, he wasn't a very reassuring fellow. This transpired late on a Wednesday night, and about a week later, some teenagers exploring the park at night found two deceased bodies in the woods, just past where we'd been seated at that picnic table. Neither body had been there long, but both showed obvious signs of not being natural deaths. When the crime was eventually solved, it came out that a man living in a shack on the property and working as a maintenance worker for the park had killed those two people the Saturday night after our experience. We don't know the circumstances under which those two individuals lost their lives, although it's very clear that there are much better ways to go than the way they did. The local newspaper ran a story on this case after it had been cracked, which involved an article and the obligatory mugshot of the suspected perp. The photo shown in the paper was a photo of the man we'd seen step out of the woods and watch us leave. This I had no doubt about, the moment I saw those eyes that looked like they were staring at me from within the newspaper. I didn't follow the case beyond what the paper showed. I don't know if he's locked up for the rest of his life. Those things I'm okay with. What I'm less okay with is that I don't know if I'll ever forget that sunken-eyed stare he shot at us while we were leaving that night. We are years removed now, and there are still times where I feel like those eyes are trained right on me.